Welcome back to the Durham Voice Voices. I'm Brighton McConnell. This podcast series is produced and reported for the Durham Voice, the community newspaper for Northeast Central Durham. With this project, we've been reconnecting with former Voice staff members and the Durham community, allowing them to share their journeys and experiences since working with the newspaper. But this week, we're doing something a little different. My guests are the co-editors of The Voice, UNC students Courtney Staten and Sam Perry. Courtney is a senior graduating with a degree in photo and video journalism from Greenville, North Carolina. She graduated from South Central High School and is an active documentary maker and producer. Following graduation, Courtney will be an outreach coordinator for Public Impact in Chapel Hill, while also working with NextDoc to help groom young filmmakers. Sam is a junior reporting major from Piscataquis County, Maine. She went to Foxcroft Academy for high school and Durham Tech for her first years of college before transferring to UNC this past year. Sam also copy edits for the Daily Tar Heel in addition to her work with The Voice. They're here to talk with me about our experiences from this last semester, helping put The Voice together and covering Northeast Central Durham. Sam and Courtney, thank you so much for taking the time and sitting down with me.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thank you so much for inviting us here for this conversation.
It's been a pretty busy semester. You two stepped into the co-editor roles quite well, I might add, but I mean, I'm sure you have a very different kind of view of it from your perspective. What was it like, because neither of you have been co-editors for paper before, what was it like stepping into that role and taking over this really kind of grassroots community newspaper?
It was intense for me because I really didn't expect to take on this role. I volunteered for it, so I guess I should have expected it, but this is the first time I've been able to have any leadership position at UNC, which has been interesting. But luckily, Jock's been able to help us throughout this entire time and walk us through everything we needed to know. But it's definitely been a ride.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely been a ride. I actually didn't know what to expect from the co-editor position, especially working for a paper. I've never worked for a paper before. I think we honestly, like, we got really lucky. We have a really great team and folks who are willing to help each other out and help us out sometimes. And so it was always sort of reciprocal with our team. And I think I really appreciated the opportunity to be able to present to our team and talk about issues that aren't often covered as much in newsrooms, talking about, you know, going beyond diversity to talk about the ways that we might be framing our stories. And I like that our team was really receptive to that conversation and was willing to question themselves outside of that presentation.
I definitely want to get into that a little bit later, so that's a good preview for it. How do you both feel like the group kind of grew from the very first week? I mean, UNC's group is what y'all worked with because there's the central group as well. But how did you feel that the UNC group kind of grew in terms of the content and stories that we were covering from kind of the first week or the first edition of The Voice to this last month?
I was really proud to see people like Jack, for example, really step out of their comfort zone and go for stories all on their own that dug a little bit deeper. But just seeing people step out of their comfort zone and really get comfortable with Durham was definitely an improvement that I saw throughout the year. And I think a lot of people really stepped up in that aspect.
Yeah, and I think just along with that, there was definitely, like, in the first week, we were all trying to figure out, like, what writing a story meant, what contacting sources meant, how early we should start, all of those different questions. And it felt like by the end, people got comfortable with troubleshooting and sort of figuring out a ways around obstacles coming up, which was, like, kind of cool to see. Like, I kind of feel like now if there's a story that was supposed to happen, or that a story that we wanted to cover, that they could go out and do it in a good way.
Yeah, I definitely noticed towards the end that everyone became really self-sufficient in a way. We no longer had to dig up stories for anybody or give them their own stories. They would come up with them completely on their own.
That's usually a very good sign.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think were some of the challenges you individually had this semester with the paper and challenges that kind of the group had as a whole? One of the ones that jumps out to me is kind of the problem of being distant from Durham in some ways. Like, we have to travel to get there, and I think that's a hard aspect of the class for people if they don't have a car or just, like, you know, being – we're not embedded in the community over there, and I feel like that makes it kind of hard to cover in some ways. That's a challenge, and I think people were able to get around that, but what were some of the challenges that you both saw the group had or might have had individually with just kind of figuring out how to cover Northeast Central Durham?
I think balancing this class along with all of our other classes is a huge challenge. I was lucky enough to have gone to Durham Tech, which is kind of within our area, and I lived around there as well. So I was more familiar with it than a lot of other students, but it was just balancing everything else in my life and trying to give these stories the attention that they deserved was the biggest challenge for me.
Yeah, and I think for me, like, honestly, what you just said, the distance was the toughest thing. I don't drive. I don't have a car. I don't go to church in Durham. I'm not at the basketball games and the football games, or I'm really just imagining my hometown, like, activities right now. And so, like, because of all that, I wasn't always sure what the community actually might want covered the most. And I also wasn't, like, there long enough to just be able to talk to people and get relationships. And I didn't really know my job, so I kind of felt like, well, in 3 months, 4 months, however long our semester is, that, like, I'm going to be gone. And basically, like, in a sense, I feel like the community kind of takes time to train us to be good journalists and to be good reporters. And they do it accidentally. They just do it in being nice and trying to, like, make sure the Durham Voice is actually, like, you know, being done well by these college students and such. But thinking about the fact that, like, after I've gone through my training, I'm putting up quotations, no one can see it because it's a podcast. But after that training, there's going to have to be a new group of students who's retrained, basically. And so thinking about that labor that the community might have to be going through just for me to be able to put out a story that serves them was kind of like a difficult situation for me to, like, reconcile with in my head.
What are some of the stories you think we covered best this year / things that we didn't see coming? I know that the kind of the Ann Atwater coverage for me was something that really surprised me that we were able to kind of dig that back up in some ways. But what were some stories that, I mean, you know, the MLK parade, it kind of started with that. And I was, you know, Johnny did a story on, like, a brewery opening. I was expecting that kind of stuff. What were some stories that you both had to look over this year that you were like, wow, I really didn't expect for someone in our class to end up going there?
Okay, so one kind of happy circumstance. Diane actually covered two stories that I really liked. She covered other ones. Or everybody covered other ones, but there are two that really stood out for Diane. The credit union, and also the story on Sonny Kelly. So Sonny Kelly is the writer, actor of a one-man performance called The Talk. And The Talk talks about basically, like, the conversation that particularly Black men have to have with their sons about racism and about police brutality, and just, like, rooting all of that back to the ways, like, violence against Black men shows up across history. And I just thought that was, like, kind of, like, I compared her coverage to some other coverage that I'd seen about The Talk, sort of on accident. I was trying to refine the article for Sonny to make sure that he saw it. And I just happened to find these other articles, and I was reading through, and I was just thinking about how Diane's piece was just so much more in-depth and it felt so much more cared for. And I didn't realize it the first time I read it. I knew it was a good article, but in comparing it to the others, I realized just how much time she took in trying to pull out the heart of that story. Which is funny, because, like, if you meet Sonny, his heart is worn on his sleeve, kind of. But just the way that she put all of that into words was just absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And it was great for me because I just so happened to know Sonny and had filmed for him, a year ago, maybe? It's been a year. I filmed for him a year ago. And so just to, like...
That's really cool. Yeah, the coincidence.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was something that definitely stood out to me.
I think another shocking thing this semester was just how good our photographers were. You know, we did deserve them. They did so well all semester with the talk photos. Those were really beautiful. With the Ann Atwater story, they had really good portraits in there. And the MLK parade, which I love because it's my story and Courtney's story.
But like family.
It was probably one of the most impactful stories of my time with the Durham Voice and really started off our semester strong. But the photography in that piece was just so cool.
You know the photograph that I keep going back to?
Which one?
Actually, it's not from Feels Like Family. Feels Like Family has great photography. But I remember Will's photo from the Meet the Heroes event.
Oh, the kid with the fishing?
Oh, y'all should find it. It's literally like there's copies in the library. Whenever I walk in, I'm just like, yes, Will.
Yeah, Will's incredible. Uh-huh.
What were some of the experiences you had this semester that kind of showed you the gratitude people had in Durham, in our community, for our newspaper?
Do you remember Joan? She was like the little lady that I interviewed during the MLK parade, and she was just an angel. And oh my gosh, I went up to this woman, and I just wanted to ask her a couple questions about her experience at this parade. And we must have talked for almost an hour, and poor Courtney was searching for me this entire time. Because I just vanished. But she told me that she was actually one of the first black woman administrative professionals at UNC.
Wow.
And she just really inspired me. And I was really grateful that she decided to share that story with me, I guess. Because, like, it takes so much out of people to be able to sit down and express their feelings and share their background. So to be able to just have a complete stranger have that moment with you was an incredible experience for me.
That was a great moment. I think, honestly, okay, so from speaking of the Meet the Heroes event, I think one moment that kind of stuck out to me was after publishing the story, one of the families that we had interviewed, it was just like they were just leaving comments, like each one of them, they were like leaving, there's like five comments on that page, and I was just reading through them, because I actually kind of like had a, like I knew Durham Voice was important, but I wasn't even sure on like on the online front, if, you know, like how that was received, who was actually reading it. And we hadn't actually notified them that the story had been published yet, the Meet the Heroes story had been published yet, like both me and my co-writer, like we didn't text them yet. But literally like that night we woke up and there's just comments all over our page, and it's from them, where I was just like, wow, like y'all must have been trying to find this. And it was kind of, it was sweet. And I really appreciated it. It kind of made me a lot happier. There's a lot of different logistical things that happened to get that story published and ready, and just the time that they took to write those things before we could even like notify them of their story being up. It meant a lot to me. And they're super dope people. If you're listening, I love y'all.
We obviously had great moments. We had some tougher moments too throughout the semester. I'm curious to what both of you think, being in co-editor roles. You know, The Voice serves its community fairly well. I think we all learned that this semester, just working with Jock and seeing that and seeing how the community reacts to the paper just as a whole. But what are some ways you think that The Voice could either improve its coverage or just kind of improve its just kind of general existence as a paper?
I think The Voice could be even better if Jock took on some staff writers from UNC all year round, or at least for multiple semesters, that could really ingrain themselves in the community.
That consistency has got to be hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, taking it as a class and just having people filter through.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely a downside.
And honestly, I feel like it would be great if there could be more staff writers from Durham. Even if, like, I really appreciate it that there's high school Durham students working on the paper. I didn't get to meet all of those students, but just maybe like either more students, or I actually don't know how many students there are, but like just more people from Durham. I think I could maybe make the paper a little bit better, because I think that's still something that we encounter. There's probably so many other things that we would be able to have a pulse on if you know, the UNC students were actually living in Durham and grown up in Durham. And, you know, like if Durham was our community, and the reality is that it's not. And then, and because of that, like the nature of our work, even though like we cover stories as well as we could possibly cover them, it will always be like some form of extraction. And so I think like the answer to that is to make the paper that's for the Durham community, like to, for anybody in Durham who wants to like create, you know, be able to take that type of role, to open up the opportunity to them. I don't know what that process would look like, but I think it might be kind of cool to have UNC and Central students working with folks who are also living in the community to create the stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to what you talked to our class about this semester, which is decolonizing journalism as a whole. You have more experience about decolonizing documentary, but would you touch on that a little bit here, just what that is and potentially how working with people from Durham would help the voice with that?
Yeah, so I also want to acknowledge the idea of decolonizing the journalism or even decolonizing the documentary fields are definitely not new. I'm not the first person to have like that idea, but decolonizing the journalism field basically refers to the idea that journalism and documentary, like those mediums, were created out of a colonial context, that there were rules that were made in the exclusion of certain groups or made to exclude certain groups. So, and the certain groups I'm talking about are usually Black, Brown, lower income, LGBTQA plus, people with disabilities, all of those historically vulnerable identities, students are included in that as well. And so in acknowledging that context, when people say they want to decolonize the journalism field, they basically do a strict analysis of power to figure out who has historically had the power in this field, why, and then how can we disrupt that system of power. And so one thing that I talked to our class a lot about was one way to like really start to disrupt power is to root the power more so in the community. So I told them about a quote, "Nothing about us without us is for us." It's a quote that's used by the Southern Documentary Fund, one of the largest sources of funding for Southern filmmakers. And Southern Documentary Fund took that quote from a disability movement where people with or disabled persons were saying that it would be better to have other disabled people telling their stories, because for a long time when their stories were told, it was told in a very singular way in which like the narrative arc was trying to get closer to ableness or to normality also. Mm-hmm. And so the call was, nothing about us without us is for us. If we're not part of making the images or the stories or in whatever way, then the stories cannot be for us, right? And so applying that same thing to the journalism field, it's honestly like it's kind of a little bit like community journalism, and saying that to do journalism, you can't do journalism about our community without having people from our community part of the decision-making process. And that's especially true for Northeast Central Durham, for any community that's Black, Brown, lower income, or any of those other vulnerable identities, that having those people, the people from those identities as part of decision-making in any realm of journalism or any realm of documentary can help to make that whole process less extractive and more true to what would be an accurate representation of their stories.
It's a lot to cover, for sure.
It's a lot. There's a lot of history in it.
But it's important to acknowledge.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Important. One thing that I've thought about a lot is there's kind of an idea of we need to acknowledge things to move past them. I think decolonizing the journalism field is not about acknowledging it and acknowledging the past to move past it, but acknowledging the past to move with it, you know? like actually like learning from those struggles and keeping that those stories alive so that we can forever like one, remember how we got to this new issue in quotations, you know, and then to figure out like how can we apply those lessons so that we don't have to reach the same obstacle in the future.
Right. Instead of just kind of burying it in the past or saying we don't do this anymore, or just kind of not even acknowledging it in some ways.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way to put it. To wrap things up here, to start kind of wrapping things up, what do you think will be some of the biggest experience takeaways from this semester that you'll carry with you into the next year or into post-college careers?
I've really learned how to be more personal with people that I'm interviewing and just to kind of enjoy the moment, enjoy the stories that they tell you. I think sometimes as journalists, we become jaded and we just kind of want the answers to our questions so we can go home and write. And at like being in Durham, so many people, if I sat down to talk to them, they wanted to share with me, you know, their life stories, basically. And I've really learned to love that aspect and really seek that aspect when I sit down and talk to people. So I think that's a really important takeaway to note, is just that you're going into somebody's community and you have to treat them like they're a part of your community too, in a way, you know? You really have to sell yourself in and talk to people like they're your own family.
So that emotional investment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't just go in and be cold and expect yes and no or answers to questions or just straight answers sometimes.
I guess it's still about the comments in the journalism field. I was kind of, I normally whenever I'd like talk to people about decolonizing or power or any of those things, I've kind of been pigeonholed into folks saying that only applies to the documentary field for XYZ reasons. And I think the Durham Voice kind of taught me that no, it doesn't just apply to the documentary field, that it really does apply to the journalism field, and that particularly those who want to engage in community journalism have that extra incentive to want to learn about it, so that they can learn how to serve their community more. And I really appreciate that. And then outside of that, just that Bull City is great. Durham is awesome. I really like the spirit. And I mean, for every person who's allowed me to take up their time, I'll just try to take that respect and joy with me. And just carry it with me, like, after I leave UNC. Yeah.
I think that's great. Well, that's all the questions I had in mind. Is there anything else that you both want to add?
We can do a thank you to Jock.
Yes, thank you, Jock.
Thank you, Jock. Jock was my 180 professor, the beginning photojournalism professor. So it's come in full circle. Took him, like, 2-3 years ago. We've had a great teacher, and we've had a great team.
Yeah, I think we really have to thank our staff, too, because they really pulled it all together in the end. And it was an incredible experience, especially for a couple people that have never been editors before.
Sam, Courtney, thank you so much for sitting down, and thank you so much for your leadership with the paper this year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Courtney Staten and Sam Perry, UNC students and co-editors for the spring 2019 editions of the Durham Voice. With this episode comes the end of my time with The Voice as well. It's been a wonderful experience speaking with all the guests on this podcast, and I hope it's been able to share some incredible stories from the Durham area. If you'd like to hear additional episodes of Durham Voice Voices or find more stories of Northeast Central Durham, be sure to visit our website, durhamvoice.org. Our music was written by Forrest McConnell, and for the final time, I'm your host, Brighton McConnell. Thanks for listening.